What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I have a hot topic today. Oh my gosh, so much going on in the world. And with AI just screaming out the headlines, everything that we need to be thinking about and doing, I feel like it's just so crazy. CEOs absolutely have to think about the future, but we're so busy just pedaling as fast as we can to keep up that I think we don't really have the time and we don't make the time to really think about the future. And so what I'm seeing is these small and mid-sized companies that I work with kind of lagging behind a bit because they're just pedaling as fast as they can to keep up and not stopping to really think about the future or how they're going to use AI really properly. So I've been thinking about this a lot and I started following an amazing futurist. Now, I've heard of futurists and, you know, in the past I've read some, but when I really started digging into like, what is a futurist? What do they do? Well, I know everybody wishes they had a crystal ball. If you follow a futurist, it's a little bit like having one. Now, some of the stuff they say is going to just smack you in the face and it's going to hurt, but some of it will really get you thinking and enable you to move forward. And so I am so delighted today to be able to have the leading Forbes female futurist. And I love that because a lot of futurists I follow also, they're men, but I found a female futurist. So I'm very excited about that. And she is going to share with us what's going on and how we can manage that because it's a lot, right? So welcome to the show, Alaysha. I'm just delighted to have you today.
Thank you so much. I am thrilled to be here and I'm very much looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, well, I want to just tell the audience a little bit like about more about how I found you and how I got so enthralled with what you're doing, right? And now I'm just like, wow, we need futurists. Like, are we growing up more kids to be futurists? Because it's so important. But I was following Alaysha on LinkedIn. You know, that's how I find a lot of people and how you all find us and all of that. And she had a webinar. It's like, oh, I'm going to pop into that. And when I got in that webinar, I was just astounded because you were talking about things that like hit me so hard and I had to like really think about it. And one of the things you said that blew me away was the change is no longer exponential. It's quantum. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, whoa, like what does that even mean? Like my brain can't even, you know, process that fast. But anyway, before we jump into all of this, just tell the audience, what does a futurist do and what do you do and offer to your clients?
Yes, absolutely. So as far as futurist goes, it's one of those things that like manager could mean 80 million billion different things in the world. What it means for me and the kind of work that I'm up to is that I study out at the very edge of disruption, largely technological, but other modalities of disruption to try and understand, to get to the basics of how disruption is going to change our world and then translate those disruptive dynamics into tools, strategies, and frameworks that businesses can use to create results today. And so it's helping people understand what's happening and then pull a more compelling future into the present. And the way that I got on this path was a total fluke. I went to a different kind of business, but I went to a conference and heard somebody talking about self-driving trucks and the technology behind them and how they're going to how this technology was going to shift so much about business in the business world. So I just started to research as much as I could possibly find. And for the last 10 years, I've dedicated both my career and my life to answering the big central questions of the future of work and strategy, so that through learning and development programs, through strategy design and other things that I work with my clients on, they can better navigate what's here and coming.
Yeah, what's here and coming, because I think that's where we get stuck a little bit. First of all, few too many people I know are living in the past. And especially when it comes to sales, it's like, hey, people, that train has left the station. That ship has sailed. Every cliche I could say, right? Like that stuff doesn't work anymore. Stop doing it. Right. So it's like, get out of the past for sure. Right. Be here now is great. Right. And you absolutely, if you're running a company, right, you got to be here now, get out of the past and be here now. But what I just don't see is enough people really looking at the future. And you know how CEOs are, they do a 3-5 year plan, you know, and 3-5 year plan. Okay. Yeah, no, because you've got to think beyond these days. I feel like, you know, what's your 25-year plan? Yeah, you're not going to get all the tactics for that, but like really think into the future. Will this company even be here in 25 years? My goodness, right? So I feel like we have to have, as CEOs and all of our leadership teams and boards and people who advise us, we have to have a different way of thinking. And I just love that. And that's, you know, I think what a futurist can help us do as well, right?
Well, yeah. And in thinking about strategy, you hit on something that's critical and one of the big intellectual gateways into understanding how to make a shift. Most of us think about strategy from what I call a past anchored lens. We ask the question, what can I logically do with what I've already done and what I already know?
Right.
Really data driven. And sometimes it's not even as strategic as data driven. It's like, how do we just add 10% on next year's budget over this year's budget and call it good? And that's a way to do things. But the challenge with that is that the world is changing so quickly out here that the rules of the past simply don't apply. When you made the nod earlier to what does quantum strategy look like, to break it down into regular English that folks can understand, we're thinking about the speed of change that has shifted from centuries to seasons to seconds. And so the linear thinking or even the exponential thinking that helped you plan in a world that moved a little bit more slowly just doesn't apply. Right. You think about back in the day, a 5-year plan, you could set out a 5-year plan and lock and load and finish the 5-year plan and not need to poke your head up really along the way. But those things are gone. And so how do we do, instead of past anchored, something that I call future led, where is you design what it is that you want to create? What is the outcome that we're looking for? What is the impact that we want to have? And there's a series of questions that I lead CEOs and their teams through. But from that vision of a compelling future, like you said, not the here are the 87 steps that we're going to need to get there, but from the vision of the compelling future, you then begin to bring it into the present. And that allows you to dance much better with all of the emerging dynamics that are unfolding.
The vision of the compelling future, that's what CEOs need, right? And I think a lot of them just don't have it yet. Right? But the vision of that compelling future. And I think what's so important, you said, move away from strategy that is anchored on the past to future led. And that means like you kind of got to scrap it all and think differently. And when I was at Saster in May with, you know, all the SaaS company software as a service and listening to Jason Lemkin talk about, hey, whatever you're doing now, it's just not going to be it. And so as a leader, if you take a subset of your team or, you know, to think differently and say, yeah, we've got to continue making money the way we're doing it right now. Keep doing that for a minute. But this team has to think, if we could build it from scratch today, if we could do it any way we wanted, what would this be now today, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be what it was and have your company survive. And so I just think that is such an important point for CEOs to hang on to, get away from being anchored in the past and doing your strategy off that to future led. So let's talk a little bit more about what that looks like. You said compelling vision. How do I, as a CEO, get a compelling vision? Like, I'm not really sure I know exactly what that means. How would I start to get that compelling vision? And then how would I lead a team to building a strategy based on the future led, like you said.
Sure. Yeah. So you can really think of it in its most basic form as answering one critical question, which is free of constraints of the past. So if I were to just pretend like exactly like you said, we're going to build a business that we're doing right now, but without any of the things that we've known or learned from the past, what is it that I want to create? Given that we're here, what do we want to create? What do we want to build? That's, if you answer no other questions, that's the critical one. But really, there's a three-part framework or three-part series of questions that you can move through, which is, what do I want to create? What kind of impact do I want to have? And how do I want to use my life? My life as an executive and my life and the life of the business. And these three questions can help you suss out what it is that you're really building, why it is that you're building it, and what's motivating you. And then really, what is the impact that you yourself and that your business is looking to create in the world beyond including, but beyond solely a profit margin? Because then you start to open up your scope for opportunities to a much broader field.
I really like the way you laid that out because it includes, what do I want to do with my life, right? Like, I think that we sometimes, and I believe it's changed a lot, but I've been in business a long time. And I think that a lot of businesses were built on, hey, here's a product that there's a need for, and we can make bazillions of dollars. Let's go. Right. And without any thought to, like, will I like this? Will I enjoy it? Is it my passion? Now, look, you know, you hear the stories of big companies today when they were small companies, when they were just starting, you know, Hewlett Packard starting in the garage, Steve Jobs, all those, you know, famous stories that we hear. And those people were passionate, right, at that time about what they were starting up. But, you know, I mean, those are like the Cinderella stories, right? Like, they grow up and be fantastic. There's so many, many more businesses in this world that are never going to be that, but they're going to be super important to our economy and super important to the people that work there and the people who lead them. And I think that for the health and well-being of our planet, CEOs need to dig into that part. And I think it's really going to be the only way they're going to have a compelling vision for the future is, what do I want to do with my life? Yeah, making money is great. And I'm all for it, you know, but I think that what we have to do is think beyond just, you know, what is this company going to do? And I love that. What impact is it going to have? Like, who do we serve and why do we serve them? And why is that important, right? What is that impact about? But then what about my life, right? So I love that. And I think if leaders start thinking that way, Alicia, then we're going to really do a lot better.
Well, that series of questions actually came initially out of the main reason why I left the corporate world so 10 years ago. So my career as a futurist, as I said, began as a total fluke. But the original reason that I left the corporate world was to solve for the problem that most people are unhappy at work. And somewhere between 75 and 85% of the planet is what the numbers have been at on the Gallup polls for the last, you know, however many years. And what that got down to for me is a fundamental flaw in strategy, which is linked to those same questions, which is why this applies not just in the career frame, but also in the business strategy frame, is the difference between asking yourself in your life, what can I logically do with what I've already done, what I already know, versus given that I'm here, what do I want to create? And it applies for career design. It applies for strategic design. And just to give you a concrete example, there's a client who I worked with for about 2.5 years. And I asked them these three questions the first time that we met. And I didn't think anything of it. We met very briefly, you know, it's sort of in a hotel restaurant kind of a situation. But I said, hey, you know, take this for the free bar advice that it is and answer these three questions for yourself and your business and see what comes of it. And by answering those three questions, he completely shifted the trajectory of his business from marching toward a successful exit to now being on the precipice less than 2.5 years later of moving from a 7-figure to a 9-figure business and having global impact as opposed to solely a financial exit. So those three questions can really bring about massive change, growth, and impact.
Very, very powerful. Okay. So I think, and that's, you know, when we said, what's the compelling, right? The compelling vision for the future, how can you know that without thinking about yourself and, you know, what you want to do and what you want to impact? So I think a lot of rethinking is going to have to go on. And CEOs are super busy and they don't have time or make time. And like we said, they're just pedaling as fast as they can to keep up. What are some practical things, like when you work with your clients, like how do you start to move them first, you know, get them to think about the strategy, right? And then move them towards this change and doing things differently.
Sure. So there's one of the big shifts or one of the entry points in conversation that I bring to the table is one of the leadership, I'll call it one of the characteristics that I've defined and developed over time, which is this notion of simultaneous strategy. Because especially if you're in the small, medium-sized business space, you are looking to produce and create results and impact today, which means sales, which means cash flow. And especially if you're earlier on in your business's career and trajectory. And though, because the world is changing so quickly out here, simultaneous strategy means the ability, expanding your ability as a leader to do both now focused results producing activities and future forward innovative thinking simultaneously. And whether that's inside your own brain or you compose teams of people to allow you to think from all of those perspectives, it can't just be a 3-day offsite innovation workshop and then you never think or talk about it again. It's got to be an ongoing sort of a thing. So that's opening up the thinking to, or expanding one's cognitive capacity to understand this idea of simultaneous strategy is a great entry point. So that's the first thing. The second thing, we want to break down the thinking into strategy and then action. And particularly before we got into the recording space, we were talking about strategy and action and AI. But thinking about strategy itself, no AI implementation or any new technology implementation exists in a vacuum.
Right.
It all exists linked to what are the business outcomes and objectives that we want to create. And this is where I think people get, they sort of lose their business minds as the market's saying, do AI, do AI, do AI. Okay, they buy a million tools, they train their teams on them, and then productivity drops. And then nothing happens. And so then they think they got to buy more tools, which is not the answer. The difference is,
well, you know what, Alicia, I call it random acts of AI, and random acts of AI do not work. Right? Well,
yeah, exactly. And so just like anything else, let's say we want to grow our business 2x to 10x in the next 3 to 5 years. Okay, great. So given that, what do we want to build? What are the business processes that are enabling that growth right now? And then you bring it to, okay, AI, where can we make those business processes more efficient with the tools of AI that are connected to clearly definable objective business outcomes that we can measure to then determine what it is that we want to do? So first, what's the strategy? Because as we said earlier, activities are not strategies. What is the big umbrella that we're looking to do? And then what are the actions, technologically driven or otherwise, that we need to put into place in order to ensure that we achieve that goal? And then continuously dancing with it as it unfolds.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like sometimes I see activity, but tied to what? And then when you don't get the results that you're looking for, you know, it's a disaster because you've spent time and money and you know, people are upset and things, you know, things are not going well. So we do have to back up and get these strategies right. And I think when you're thinking about simultaneous strategy, like you said, which I just love that, and want people to really hang on to that and adopt it. Yes, you have to get results today. So what is that strategy and what are the actions, right? And simultaneous, what is the future and what actions will we need for that? Because they'll be different.
Yeah.
And you can't bring too many of them forward, right?
Right. So you can think of it as sort of, instead of business done in lockstep, you know, first one thing, then the next thing, then the next thing, you can start to think about it as sort of a fluid infinity model, right? So it's all happening kind of at the same time, simultaneously together. And if we start to lean too much in one direction, then we can self-correct ourselves back in the other direction. Because also, you know, if you've got too many dreamers and visionaries and nobody doing the business, then you just got a lot of people saying a lot of blah, 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 but not a lot going on, right? And there's a great model of one of the people, the teachers who I sat with at the very, very beginning of my futurist experience or career is a man named Ichak Adizes. He's in his 80s now, and he's written many books, but one of my favorites that he's written is called Mastering Change. And what he does is he talks about, well, first of all, like the most exciting thing is that people think that we shouldn't have problems. Like, that's the problem that people have, that we think we shouldn't have problems. But what's actually really much more interesting is understanding if you have the right kind of problem for the right stage in your growth, right? Very nascent businesses, the biggest problem is cash. Yeah. So if you have the cash problem at the very beginning, that's the right problem to have. If you have the cash problem 10 years in, then there's something likely fatally wrong with the business.
That's so good.
Right, exactly. So understanding the kind of problem that you have. But what he does is he says, okay, if you want an organization that's going to thrive over time in a growth phase that he calls prime, you want to have four different personalities, we'll call them, or executive types. And one is the producer. So who's your sales guy producing results right now? You've got your operations folks. So these are the people who keep things going on time, your administrators. Then you've got the visionaries. These are typically CEOs, not always, but these are the ones with the big ideas. And then you've got a fourth figure who is an integrator, who helps resolve the internal tensions between the other three. Because again, so I'm very much this entrepreneur, this visionary profile. When I come into a room, I have 8 million great ideas about how things work.
Right,
and if I'm talking to an administrator or to a process person, their first question is going to be, well, how are you going to do that?
Right.
Well, why is it that you think that's going to work?
We're not ready for the how we're going to do it yet. We haven't gotten there. Yeah.
As a visionary, you're not ready for that. And you're like, why are you trying to kill my dream? However, what that person's trying to do is just get their logic on board so that they can support what it is that you're building.
Yeah.
You need all of those together in order to help an organization continue to thrive.
Yeah. So, you know, another concept that you introduced at that webinar that I attended, and I wanted to dig into, I think now is a good time. You talked about these four different kinds of leaders, right? And you need them all. And you talked about leadership in the infinity loop also. Like, you were just talking about the ebb and flow of simultaneous strategy and how you can adjust if you think of it more as an infinity loop than any kind of linear thing. But let's talk about that in terms of leadership too, because I thought that was a super interesting concept that instead of a pyramid of leadership, which we have now, where there's one person at the top and a bunch of people kind of surrounding them, but they're, you know, really the person, and, you know, we've got this little team around them, to moving from that pyramid to this more flowy infinity, well, you'll explain it better than I do, type of leadership, because I think that is going to be a hard change. So first, explain what that kind of leadership looks like. And then Let's talk about how people can start to move into it.
Sure. So if we think models of past of work versus future of work, and if we're moving away from a world of scarcity, which, as you said, there's one role at the top and there's, you know, very few executives who are in so-called leadership positions, but we move over into a world of abundance, right? World from or to and. Essentially, what we're doing is we're saying, okay, moving away from this hierarchical model, and we begin to design our teams and our leadership around outcomes and projects that we're building. And so let's say today we're doing a project on the future of work and strategy. So I would be the leader, which means that I need to inspire, engage, gather everybody, help make a plan, and ensure that stuff gets done. But tomorrow, because we're talking about sales, you would be the leader. And you would also need to do all of those things. But the difference is that in you stepping into that leadership position, my strength as a leader shines as I pull into number two or three or four slot and support you in building what you're building. And so leadership that dances in this way based on the outcomes that we're looking to drive removes hierarchy and title and looks for the person who's best able to guide through expertise and their individual leadership.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely the way to go. And I think that's happening to some degree right now. But I'm, you know, curious for this future world that we're moving into. how do you lead a company if there's no one person who is going to be the last word, right? The CEO who's going to be the last word, or the board of directors in public companies, or, you know, who's going to be the last word. I think it's, you know, to me, the concept sounds better. And it seems to me like it might be a group of leaders, which hasn't worked very well in the past, but, you know, I'm just like, all this is running through my head. So I just want to hear like what you're thinking about how that works and how that's going to move towards.
Yes. So how it works practically. So that there's a slight difference between project and strategy, design and execution, and sort of final accountability inside of an organization. And I'll draw from Ichaka Diz's work as well in this. And he talks about the importance of democracy in gathering information and in decision, in leading up to decision making. But once the decision is made, then it is very much, he uses the word dictatorship, but it is very much like, okay, we've got everybody's voices in the space for how we're going to decide. But once we've all decided, we all line up behind it and move forward with it. Amazon is a large scale company that works similarly at this model. They have a lot of room for open debate, but once a decision is made, the idea is that everybody gets behind the decision, even if you dissent. So that's one way. But also, if you want to look at a shift in how we think about leadership, there's leading in circle is different than leading from top down. And thinking about the dynamics of how that works, and if we want to pull in some of the feminine and masculine kinds of dynamics, sort of the push, force, drive, guys are going to get stuff done, well, everybody, but it's just, it's a way of doing things. But when you lead in an inclusive fashion, it shifts the dynamic. It doesn't mean that the person who's guiding or holding space for everybody isn't leading, but it is a much more democratic kind of a way of approaching things.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be hard for some companies to move that direction, but I think it's going to be absolutely necessary. And I do think that the generations coming up behind us are going to want that kind of leadership. And I'd love to, you know, we're getting towards the end, but I'd love to sort of hear your take on that. So, you know, I'm a baby boomer. I'm the tail end, but, you know, I'm still a baby boomer, right? And then the Gen Xers and then, you know, the generations. Now we've got these kids graduating from college. I don't even know which, what are they calling them anymore? But anyway, how do you think this is changing and impacting? I mean, I feel like our schools, K-12 and then even college, are not preparing them for this future that you and I are talking about right now. But I'm wondering, from your point of view, what these younger people are thinking about it and how they're moving into corporate America.
Yeah. So part of it is them just watching what's unfolding and seeing and observing that there's a lot of hot mess going on. And different from certainly when I joined the workforce, where it was like, I was a corporate burnout person. I was like 100 hours a week, traveled all over the world, anything and everything in order to execute against this. And then you see younger folks coming in and being like, this is bananas. Why would, why would you
do that? Yeah.
Structures, and it doesn't make any sense, right? So as you sort of move through this, but what we're seeing is a disconnect of the promise of what work offers: security, financial stability, healthcare in the United, if you're sitting in the United States, and that's not really available anymore. And so there's a very healthy skepticism of younger people coming in and a wonderful, rich questioning of authority. And one of the reasons that I got into, or one of the factors that I began to look at when I first started my research around the future of work, was what happens in a shifting global workforce population. What happens when the longevity science improves to such a degree that people are living not to 70 or 75 or 80, but to 100 or even more. And so you're not managing three or four generations in the workplace, but five or more. And so how do we want to encourage the diversity and the richness of that? But then how do you balance working with a baby boomer and working with someone who's 20 years old, who's just not buying a lot of what's being sold?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, it's hard because working with CEOs who are, you know, I'm going to just go the 50 plus, right? And having these younger people working for them, and they just don't understand and don't even really want to understand what these young people are thinking, or why they behave the way they behave. I mean, luckily for me, I have a couple of 30 something kids and then some 20 something grandkids, and I teach at the university. So I am in touch with these young people, and I ask them, well, why do you think that way? Why does that matter? You know, I'm talking to them all the time. So I get it, right? But then these CEOs are just like shaking their heads. Like, I don't understand, you know, why won't they work? Why can't they do this? Why don't they get that done? And I'm like, yeah, you really are of a different generation. Truly, this is this gap. And you have to start to think as a CEO, I want this youthful energy and these ideas and innovations and these different ways to work. Why can't we accommodate those, right? And then, you know, the older, more mature people that work for you, they're going to want to work in their way. And that's okay too, right? Mm-hmm. But just because I will work on the weekends or I will answer your emails at midnight, do not expect, you know, anyone else to do that. But I think they just really get stuck and they just want them. I mean, it's the age old thing, you know, about the generations, right? They want them to be like, I want them to be like me. I want them to work as hard as I work. Like
me. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe they'll be more productive in a completely different way than you ever even dreamed of. So, I think it's a tough one for CEOs and having these younger people, younger generations working. But it's so interesting. This just, oh my gosh, we could talk for hours. But okay. A couple things before we go. So let's just kind of summarize. What are just a couple of things you want to say to the CEOs who are listening to just get moving in this direction, especially since, like you and I talked about before we started recording, just the overwhelm that comes with it. Like, so we kind of stay in this little place of denial because we don't want to think about it because it's just so big and it's so much. And I feel like I don't even have any control over it, right? But that, of course, that's thinking will not take me into the future. So couple of things you want CEOs to really, you know, grab onto that are going to make a difference to them and make them be able to move into this future we're talking about.
So the first thing is acknowledge where you are. That's it. If you're feeling scared, if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling whatever it is that you're feeling, don't bypass that, because the clearer you can be about where you are, the faster you can get to wherever it is that you decide that you want to go. So if you're frustrated, if you're scared, if you hate it all and wish you could just hide under the couch and eat potato chips for the next 10 years and hope that it's over, God bless. And give yourself that minute, but ask that question, given that I'm here, even if I wish it would change, what is it that I actually want to create? Because that's your gateway into beginning to build to and create solutions. Once you're in that space, those three questions: what do I want to create? What kind of impact do I want to have? How do I want to use my life or the life of the business? And then remembering that if you're getting on to the on-ramp of AI, if you're not already there yet, first get on. And then secondly, explore and experiment with ways that you can create positive business outcome with the tools before you do large-scale adoption and dissemination, so that you are clear about what's working and why. You can break it down into measurable, easily taken steps.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, amazing. All right, I have three questions for you before we leave. I always ask my guests, what is a book you think every CEO should read?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mastering Change, that book by Ichak Adiz's. Check out his stuff. You will not be sad.
I put it into my Amazon. It's like, I got to get that book. Okay.
It's fabulous.
Excellent. Love that. What's a podcast you listen to because it makes you think differently, especially, you know, we're talking about the future, right?
Yeah. Well, I love the Peter Diamandis podcast and his conversations. And then if you haven't been listening to the telepathy tapes yet, I highly recommend that you dive into those.
Okay, great. And last question, what does every CEO need to know to win in this market?
To be present. To be present. Now is the time to do what I call moving business beyond the brain, because your intellectual capacity, even if you are a powerhouse, is not going to think you through what's here and coming. It's learning how to slow everything down and be present with what's happening so that you can become what I call the ever-evolving eye of the storm.
Oh my gosh. So powerful, Alaysha. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Really, just so powerful. I know that the CEOs who listen are going to get so much out of this. And I just look so forward to keeping in touch with you.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. What a joy.
If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.